So going over your Bibles to John 5, we're going to be reading in there today. And as usual, we're going to start out with a question. So what is the single most thing in your life that you would like to have fixed? I know that's a loaded question, isn't it? And I'm glad Mike McMillan's not here today. So, yeah. All right. So let me rephrase that. What issue, if I told you I could fix the second, would you ask me to fix? Don't be greedy. Just one. Let me ask it another way. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
That's a black way of putting
it. So everybody nearly
Yeah.
has
So,
some kind of problem with the family somewhere.
to use an older word, do you have an affliction? You know, body aches. You know, there's a bunch of them we could name, right? So, the way that Jesus put this was, do you want to get well? And we're going to look very closely at what that Greek word for is translated to well is, because if you look at the Greek, that I don't think none of the translations truly expand on that word. We're going to really get into that a little bit later on. But do you want to get well? Hey, everybody in here say yeah, right? Now, whatever your affliction is, or whatever your problem is, or whatever your want is, yeah, that'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? So when I look at when you think about the things, the afflictions in your life, or whatever you want fixed, is it what you thought about when I asked that question? Is it personal to you? I'd probably say yeah, right. It'd be something personal, because that's what you think about, right? Did anybody think of anything spiritual? Okay. That's personal, right? All right. So again, as we asked that question, do you want to get well? The if I walked up to Mike Castile right now, and he was sitting here, and I asked him, do you want to be healed? What do you think he'd say? Would it be a duh? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Want to be healed? Well, Jesus asked that question of a guy. Has anybody seen the first or sec, first and second year of Chosen? Do you see the story that we're going to talk about today, where Jesus goes up to the guy at the pool at Bethsaida and asks him that question? And the Chosen had played against, oh, who was it? His brother was one of the disciples. Is it who? I can't remember now exactly what, but he the Chosen shows it as a kid falling out of the tree and was paralyzed. But the guy, and we'll look more at the story here. And the whenever we read it, we're going to look at it in a totally different light than what I think you've read it for in the past. And again, as always, I want to keep talking about this. Every time Jesus taught or spoke or did anything in his methods, his messages or somewhere like that, they were always on purpose. None of things are recorded in the Gospels without purpose, right? So here's the thing. Any interaction Jesus had in any of these Gospels is truly an interaction with us. Because every question he asked is asked to us. When we read it, that question is asked to us. So as we go through these, that's what I keep asking y'all guys, to put yourself in. And the way we answer these questions and the way we look at these questions really kind of shows and helps guide our Christian life, our walk with God, the things that we do, our motivations, all these things. These questions are very, very important as we go through them. Okay. So I want you to put yourself in it. All right. And as I've always said, and I'll say it again, we need to read the scriptures as spectators, not, I mean, as participants, not spectators. It's not a history. It's not a history book. Right. So now then, so I want to read, starting with verse one. And I think this one's I copied out of, but I think it's NIV, but we'll go through it. So this is starting at verse one. After this, there was a Jewish festival. John doesn't mention which festival it is. Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem near the Sheep's Gate in the north city wall is a pool with an Aramaic name, Bethesda. Now, that pool has been found, you know, by archaeologists. It's a well-known place. It's there. There's not water in it at this time, but it was thought of that there was a earthen or underground spring that fed it. And if you know the story that leads up to it, the afflicted people, whatever was wrong with them, would gather around this pool. And as the water would gurgle, they felt that it was an angel that had stirred the water. And really the first one in the pool was the most likely one to be healed, but getting in that pool would be a healing action. And if you remember the story from Chosen about this man was, he said, I have no one to help me get in the water. Nobody's there to help me. So everybody else beats me to the water to be healed, and I can't get healed. And, you know, you can imagine all kinds of stuff, whether it's a family member or a friend that probably drops him off there, or maybe he lives there, he's homeless. You don't know what the whole story is, and John doesn't go into detail about that. But as we read on, it had five covered porches, and a crowd of people who were sick, blind, lame, and paralyzed sat there. A certain man was there who had been sick for 38 years. Now, you have to realize also, too, at this time, life expectancy wasn't a whole lot more than that. So this guy had been sick for a long, long time, or been whatever was wrong with him for a long time. When Jesus saw him lying there, knowing that he already had been there for a long time, he asked him the question, do you want to get well? Sick man answered him, sir, I don't have anyone who can put me in the water when he's stirred up. When I'm trying to get in it, someone else has gotten in ahead of me. Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Immediately the man was well, and he picked up his mat and walked. Now that day was the Sabbath. Pay real close attention to these next few words. The Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath. You aren't allowed to carry your mat. He answered, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. They inquired, what man who said to you, pick up your mat and walk? The man who had been cured didn't know who it was because Jesus had slipped away in the crowd gathered there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said, see, you have been made well. Don't sin anymore in case something worse happens to you. The man went and proclaimed to the Jewish leaders that Jesus was the man who had made him well. All right. So, you know, one thing is I always want to do is we want to set the scene for this and what's going on. So if you remember, this story follows the meeting of Jesus at the woman at the well. All right. So, and, you know, about the living water that was actually when he revealed in John's gospel, when he revealed that he was the Messiah. So he's admitted publicly that he is the Messiah. Right. Then he went to Galilee, you know, and then he healed the government official's son, and he wasn't even with the son. The son was in another town. So he healed him, not even being right. So, and then he comes up and this setting comes up. So again, Jesus in Jerusalem, one of the religious festivals, they don't know which one. The disciples were, you know, they were with him shortly after the issue at the well. So they're probably somewhere in Jerusalem. John doesn't mention them being at this particular thing. He talks about the pool of Bethesda near the Sheep's Gate. And as I mentioned earlier, it's there. You can go see it. It's fed by a spring. It's interesting. If you Google hot springs, the one that first comes up is Warm Springs, but there's several of them. There's one outside Boise, and there's some very popular ones out that on what it heals. You remember, It was, you see a lot if you go to Warm Springs, there's a lot of history there for the different presidents, President Roosevelt and others that were there, right? So imagine this pool was like, you can see what it was like. As we know, there was limited medical, capabilities at the time. But here was an interesting thing about the time that this was going on. The Jewish leaders were adamant that if something had afflicted you like that, it was because of your sin. It was attributed to sin. So therefore, if you were sinful, they couldn't be around you because they would be defiled. Now, does that make any sense? But that's what it was. It was sinners being punished for their sin. Their existence was at the mercy of family or friends. And this guy in the store apparently had somebody that either brought him there or he lived there. One guy wrote, he said, "I can't imagine the degree of illness, sickness, disease, open wounds, deformities, and disabilities that were presented by the people gathered at this well." He said, "Picture they were all there, maybe some of them conversing with each other, others crying out in their pain and misery, with at least one eye trained on the water. Because as soon as it gurgled, this mass of broken humanity would shuffle, drag, pull, and push their way as one giant diseased creature, each one trying to get waters first." See, I mean, you can imagine what this is about. So you might ask, if this place is a gathering of the sick and infirm, why was Jesus there? And that's exactly why Jesus was there, right? He was drawn to places where needy people gathered. The story, one of the stories, Luke 14, 16, 30, talks about it. Said, "You can be certain that Jesus is drawn to the broken and wounded people in our community and the places in your life as well. Not only was he drawn to the place, he was looking specifically for this man." Guy had been sick for 38 years, whatever wrong with him for 38 years. Is exactly why Jesus was there. And he says he's seeking places of human need. He's drawn to places where people are at. All right. We don't know how old the man was. I talked about that earlier. We don't know this specifically of what was wrong with him, but whatever it was crippled so that he couldn't walk or do anything on his own. Don't know how long he had been there. We're left to imagine what just to let our imaginations run wild. This is what John tells us, though. He said that Jesus knew the man had already been there for a long time, indicating Jesus knew about the guy. How long his condition is, what it was, what his state of mind. We don't see this in the original translation, but the original language is very clear. And this is what I was talking about. The reason Jesus knew about this guy wasn't because he had heard about him or somebody had talked about him. That he was talking to people around. The original language talks about this, and the word "new" is truly translated in Greek. The literal translation is supernatural awareness. The word that he uses this, and I don't have the Greek word. I forgot to write it down. Was a word that John used 15 times in his gospel. 14 of those times is focused on Jesus' divine knowledge. One's not, right? But Jesus knew about this man through his divine knowledge. I mean, he's omnipresent, omnipotent. I mean, because he's God. He knew this man's situation, his mindset, and his need. Think he knows ours too? Yeah. Keep that in mind as we go through this. So Jesus came to the man. The man didn't come to Jesus. The man had no friends who brought Jesus to him, like the guy that was let through the roof, right? The man didn't have family members approaching Jesus on his behalf. The man was a face in the crowd of the sick and outcast. He didn't even know who Jesus was, didn't recognize it. But Jesus looked for him specifically. One guy wrote this. He said, "The grace of God in Christ Jesus reaches out to us before we ever ask or ever know who he is or know that he can make us well." I thought that was a good quote. So now then, let's go to the question. So you kind of see what the situation is. Do you want to get well? How many people in here, and I'll raise my hand first, have had something you wanted to get well of that was not because you were sick? And I'll be the first one to raise my hand. Right? You remember what you did first? Was Jesus your first look? Wasn't mine. Wasn't my first way. The guy's been showing up this place. Why would Jesus even ask the question to him, do you want to be healed? You look at commentaries on this, and you get some real weird commentaries, and there's actually people that go, well, that's the rudest question there is in the Bible. That, well, then you don't understand what's been talked about here. Do you want to be healed? One guy wrote, he said, since Jesus knew the guy so well, you'd think he'd know the answer already. Or maybe because Jesus knew the guy so well, he knew the answer wasn't as obvious as it seems. Right? So don't laugh at what I'm fixing to say, because could you hear me out with this? Let's look at the guy's situation. From everything we know, there's some things we can figure out if we just think about it for a minute. The guy, along with others, was caught up in the superstitions and myths of the day. So if he's being told it's his sins that's causing him to be that way, and all the religious leaders are telling him that, what do you think he's doing?
A bad person.
Yeah. Exactly. He was so desperate for healing, he was willing to put his hopes in some bubbly water. This is a little like people who get their health products off Home Shopping Network, right? Some people are so desperate for healing, they'll buy anything, and this guy was equally that desperate. More than that, he had dealt with this so long that even though they was looking for healing, he was probably stuck in a place of resignation. He had focused so long on his disabilities, pain, his obstacles, his weaknesses, his loneliness, his challenge, he probably couldn't see any other way out. Couldn't even see Jesus. One guy wrote this. He said, are we so focused on our messes, we don't see Jesus? And the answer to that is yes. Astounding yes. This guy wrote that this was a guy that did a counseling, and he recorded this. And listen to this very carefully. So over the years, I've provided counseling with people. He said, I've noticed people will come to me to talk about their problems, but some people have grown so comfortable with the problems that the idea of change is frightening to them. They'd rather live with the pain that they do not know than take the risk of living life in a way that they're unfamiliar with, even if that involves healing. He said, a lady came to me one time. She was concerned about her husband. He was a high-functioning drug addict. He could do his job, but he was abusive to her in many, many ways. She said, as far as she knew, he wasn't abusive to the kids, only to her. She had confronted him on numerous times, and they had gotten fights over it. She didn't know what else to do. So she came to her pastor for this. He said, so I asked her, what are you willing to do to get well? What are you willing to do in order to help your husband? How desperate are you to have a healthy family and a marriage? She said, what do you mean? He said, are you willing to do whatever it takes to help your husband and see what he's got to lose, because he's losing everything? He said, I promise you that the kids are living this messed up, even if he leaves them alone. He said, but now you enable him to make excuses for him, and he figures he can keep using and abusing you. He's having his cake and eat it too. Are you willing to kick him out and tell him that until he gets professional help, he can't come back? He said, she was silent for a while. He told her, says, go home, pray about it. Let's get back together, and you can tell me what you think. A week later, she came back. This was her answer. I'd rather stay with him and his addiction and abuse than to have to face a possibility of life without him. He said she was more comfortable with her pain than she was willing to accept in order to get well. He said, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to oversimplify this. He said, but at the end of the day, if you're more comfortable in your pain, you're willing to change, you really don't want to be made well. And, you know, I know for myself, I accepted things before I was willing to accept Christ. I was willing to accept the things in my life, maybe, and I knew wasn't totally right, before I was willing to make a change. But he said, he goes on to write, he said, the guy in the story was stuck in desperate superstition, stuck in resignation, comfortable with his pain, focused on his obstacles and weaknesses and challenges. We should have been focused on Jesus. He said, thankfully, though, Jesus still did a man in reality without hardly waiting for the guy to answer. While the guy was still making excuses, remember, he said, nobody put me in the water. Nobody's here to take me. I can't get in because everybody beats me to the water. Once it's stirred, comes and get up. Pick up your mat and walk. So immediately it was healed. So Jesus had already healed the guy and said all the guy do had to obey. He said he couldn't continue to focus on his issues and never know he was healed, but instead he took Jesus at his word and did what Jesus told him to do. He said, but there's something about Jesus that was compelling. The look in Jesus' eyes said, I know all about you. I love you. The authority in Jesus' voice was enough for him to obey, and he was made well. Now, going on with the same guy, he said, we know from the rest of the passage that the religious rulers weren't impressed or healed or about his healing. They're mad at the guy for what he's doing, but listen to what they say, all right? He doesn't know the man's name, right? He doesn't know who it was Jesus. He doesn't know anything about it, and he doesn't know all the theology going on. He doesn't know anything about it. But don't miss what the Pharisees said. And it says, in verse 10, it says, the Jewish leaders said to him, who said to the man who had been healed? Now, they admitted that he was healed, but their only reaction was, he did it on the Sabbath. Yeah. It was on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to do that. Then Jesus meets him up. It's him. And he says, you know, here's the guy. He's actually gone to the temple to worship. That's a good thing, right? Jesus meets him up. And here's some of the things I think gets kind of messed up when people read this sometimes. He said, you know, see, you've been made well. Don't sin anymore in case something worse happens. And, you know, stop sinning or something may worse happen. The guy wrote, this is still from his commentary. He said, Jesus did not equate the man's illness to be a result of sin. Not all sins causes physical illness. Not all illness is because of sin. Now, don't be fooled that if we go through and as a result of some of the sins we do, we have illness as a result of that. Okay. That can happen. I mean, just because, you know, not necessarily that we have the illness as a punish for sin, but sometimes we do stupid things, right? And I did really stupid things in my life, but that's another day. It could be there's some kind of contributing sin, but in John, the sin is defined this way. This is what John says. Sin is ultimately not believing in Jesus as the one God sent to reveal the Father to us and redeem us. Right? So imagine there was a man who goes to the doctor for help in case of poison ivy. Here's a good analogy. After administering the prescription to relieve the problem, the doctor looks him straight in the eye and said, I've helped you with this irritating skin condition, but now that you're here, I must get to something far more important. You must stop drinking or one day you'll be facing something more serious than poison ivy. A weird thing for the doctor to say, isn't it? The poison ivy was not caused by drinking, but the treatment of the poison ivy gave the opportunity for the doctor to address a far more serious issue and condition to identify. The crippling man's sin didn't cause his sickness, but there was a deeper issue that, left unresolved, would result not only a crippling life, but eternity forever in judgment and hell. All right. So how does this apply to us? So we saw what the situation was. We know what the thoughts of the people were at the time that were crippled. We know that the issues that these people were, you know, trying to get well, and this was their only avenue to get well. And here comes Jesus along and heals this guy and has nothing to do with the stirred waters, right? One of the commentaries said this: consider the broken, wounded, crippled areas of your life that you've been living in. Perhaps they're physical, emotional, or relational. Ask yourself, how long have you been dealing with them? Have you given up hope and given in to resignation? Have you been dealing with it for a long time? Are you actually more comfortable with the disability than you are open to change and getting it done?
Yeah. Okay. See, that kind of, to me, is what you're sitting here and you kind of think, let's think outside the box, maybe just a little bit. But, you know, Jesus is asking, do you want to get well? Because he wants the guy to actually say it. Well, he doesn't actually say yes. Mm-mm. You know, and he's been in this condition for 38 years. We don't know how long he's been coming to school. I mean, pre- presumably has been coming to the pool a long time. Let's say that. But somebody always gets down there first. Well, if somebody's always getting down there first, maybe you need to come and get one of those closed spaces.
Maybe
he doesn't want. See, maybe he doesn't really want to be healed. Maybe there's something about this lifestyle that he's very comfortable with. And if he's healed, he's going to be expected to get a job and now actually
support his exactly. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Maybe,
sorry? Do you want to be healed?
Yeah.
You know, God could just say, well, yes, of course, but he doesn't. But somebody always beats me down there. Well, why don't you, the next time, why don't you get a closer spot?
You know, in watching it in the movie, because there was never anyone right there in the pool, they all went down the stairs. And I thought, well, why don't you just lay right there and just run against somebody?
You know,
yeah.
You probably need somebody to get closer. You think about that. Maybe he couldn't get him closer by himself. Maybe he needed someone to help him get closer to it, or he could roll in. But I kind of agree with you, too, because if you relate that to modern day, our times, I see a lot of people that don't want to be healed. You know, I mean, really, you see people, you know, like, you know, people ask for help all the time, ask for food, have help with their rent and stuff. And I'm like, tell me your story. When do you need help? Well, I don't have a job. Hold on.
Standing out in front of the place. You know, help wanted.
So yeah, you kind of can relate that to what you're saying. To the present day, about people that
we have somebody in our church right there, and their brother, who I knew way back years ago, used to play baseball with him, is homeless or was homeless. And for years, he wouldn't let people help him not be homeless.
A lot of people like that. I run into people like that all the time, especially when we were doing at the men's homeless shelter over there when I was in with Dave. And can't say his name, Suzanne's not in here. they just didn't want him. They didn't want him because, like what Bill said, they had to get a job, responsibility, all that stuff. They didn't want him. It just wasn't working.
Folks are here, you can fire him. He talks to him. He goes, oh, I know somebody that'll give you a job. Let me give him a call right now. And, oh, okay. He said, just be there Monday. People never show up.
So is spiritual healing any different than that in some cases?
No.
And trust me, just because your name is on a church directory as a member doesn't need you don't mean need spiritual healing. Trust me. It doesn't mean that. There's a lot of ways that we all need spiritual healing and day in, day out. And it doesn't have anything to do with being a church membership. It goes on. One guy wrote this. He says, Jesus is mostly deeply concerned with your spiritual condition. There's a deeper healing as well as a deeper disability you must allow Jesus to address. If you've not accepted this new life of healing, he goes on, he said, do it now. Do you want to remain well? He said, stand up in the wellness of forgiveness and healing relationship with Christ. Pick up your mat and walk. And he goes, he says, not only do you need to make a deeper commitment, but from this commitment, you need to be a witness of what Jesus has done. And I think that's that, you know, pick up your mat and walk and tell others about the one who made you well. And so, you know, if you dig into the Greek with this and you look about and you read the original Greek about what Jesus talks about is, he's like, he tells the man, you know, like, not that I knew you, but I know what's wrong with you. You know, I know what you need. And boy, does that apply to me in a heartbeat. He knows what's wrong with me. The problem we have sometimes is just to let him take that control and heal us. Because, boy, we want to do it on our own, don't we? Or sometimes we don't want to do it, period.
Pick up your mat.
You
pick up your mat. Is like carrying something? That was
the opposite. It would work, yeah.
We could only walk a certain number of steps.
Yeah. He decided you need to go get a loaf of bread, and it was a mile away. He probably couldn't go. had to wait till Sunday.
I think Jesus knew that he'd been sick for 38 years and knew everybody knew that. And then when everybody knew, saw that man walk, poke the mat, then having to go talk to the officials about it, Jesus knew that was the way to make sure he was going to end up on the cross.
All plan. Mm-hmm. All plan.
He knew that from the moment
before he left heaven. Yeah. Yeah. But so as we go through this week, again, questions that mm-hmm. Jesus asked, you know, do a little soul searching sometimes, see what we need to heal internally. I guarantee you we all got something. Promise you. Thoughts, comments?